Obituary, Whitney Houston. Whitney Elizabeth Houston, pop singer, died on February 11th, aged 48.
The year was 1985. The scene, Whitney Houston's second sellout concert in Carnegie Hall in New York. There were almost 3,000 in the audience, and from somewhere among them, as she launched into I Am Changing, a voice rang out, "Sing it, Whitney, honey. Sing us the truth." But what was the truth? Apparently it blazed before them, a huge, pure, beautiful voice from an impeccably poised young woman who had strode out in an evening gown, radiating self-confidence. She didn't move much on stage. Every ounce of power was reserved for filling the hall with spine-tingling ballads of longed-for love. Her fans could see that this was God-given, a gift hauled up from deep inside, as when the little girl in the New Hope Gospel Choir had closed her eyes tight and soloed, "Guide me, O thy great Jehovah," in church, and the Holy Spirit had rolled out over that congregation. Others, though, could see she was a product of careful packaging by Clive Davis of Arista Records, who had spotted her in a New York nightclub, signed her at 19, and then waited 2 years for the right string-lush ballads to come along, who had cut back the frizzy hair, lightened the makeup, changed the dress, and launched her on the world so perfect that by 1986 she was Billboard Artist of the Year, an instant sensation. "Like Cinderella," she said. And like Cinderella, she claimed her ambitions were small. All she wanted was to go to the mall and find true love, like any other 21-year-old. But as a soul singer, her heritage was already royal rather than rags, daughter of Sissy Houston of the Sweet Inspirations, cousin of Dionne Warwick, goddaughter of Aretha Franklin, Auntie Ree, all of whom she'd learned from when her braids still got in the way of the microphone. Hard-headed, she had chosen to build her career the way Mr. Davis advised her. Longevity, that's what it's all about. Besides, she enjoyed being a princess, possessor of multiple platinum discs, holder of 6 Grammys, earner of more money and seller of more records than any female star before her. She would order her entourage around and sack them repeatedly, trusting only her mother not to "talk shit to my ear" or "blow smoke up my ass." Fame brought her a 5-bedroomed house in the New Jersey countryside with a built-in recording studio and an Olympic pool. It also brought a train of big-voiced imitators, from Mariah Carey to Celine Dion to Beyoncé. She never worried about any of them, because whoever comes got to come after me. Even after 1992, when she took to disappearing for years at a time, her giant voice went on reverberating. Songs such as "I Will Always Love You," "I'm Every Woman," and "One Moment in Time" stayed so long in the charts and in wine bar muzak that they seemed to get into the bloodstream of the world. For some years, she held the post of America's sweetheart, pretty, God-fearing and patriotic. She went to the White House to discuss youth projects and set up a foundation to fight illiteracy. Her rendering of the Star-Spangled Banner at the Super Bowl in 1991, during the Gulf War, cuddly as a teddy bear in a white tracksuit, was so joyously rousing that it was reissued in the wake of the September 2001 attacks. But she was bad too. She liked to shock and cuss, saying that anyone who claimed that recording songs was creative rather than commercial was a fucking liar. Her private life grew raunchy, with marriage to bad boy Bobby Brown in 1992 propelling her into a whirl of boastful sex, violent rows, and cocaine. Her sequined act was just a performance, she said. Bobby, by contrast, she could be real with. As for what real meant, she was either her own best friend or her worst enemy, she said once. The biggest devil is me. Through it all, there remained an anodyne constancy about the songs. Miss Houston had placed herself, or been placed, so solidly in the mainstream that she could not easily wriggle out of it. There was a point to this. It allowed her to break onto MTV and the late-night chat shows, forging a new path for black women, as Michael Jackson had done for the men. It also proved, to many blacks, that she was not black enough, showing none of their fury and very little of the soulful gospel depths of Auntie Ree and Cousin Dion. The cutting urban hip-hop of the 1980s she found ugly, like listening to her brothers boast of the women they'd laid. when she tried angrier songs herself, as in It's Not Right But It's Okay, in 1998, they still seemed as cool and glossy as her blue sheath dress. The scratchy defiance of later albums, such as I Look to You, her last, in 2009, owed more to the drug-ravaged thinness of her voice than the miseries of her recent life. Who she was and what she really wanted remained as unclear as her bathtub death in a Los Angeles hotel on the night before the Grammys, at which Adele, another big belter in the Houston style, carried away most of the prizes. She needed the give and take of an audience, Miss Houston said. Besides, God had given her this gift to use. Yet told by Oprah Winfrey in 2009 that her voice was a national treasure and that some people thought she had squandered it, she could only whisper, terror-struck, "That's heavy." Too heavy was perhaps the truth.
The Economist.
February 18th to February 24th, 2012.
Word for word. The articles from this week's edition of The Economist in audio.
The Economist is available from all good newsagents and by subscription. Visit economist.com.
The audio edition of The Economist is produced by Talking Issues. TalkingIssues.com. Straight talking audio downloads.